The final matter on this morning's oral argument calendar is Toward Responsible Development versus City of Black Diamond.
Thank you. If it may please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Very well.
My name is David Bricklin. I represent the appellant Toward Responsible Development. This is a case about broken promises with legal significance. The land at issue here was designated for urban development back in the 1990s, but the type of urban development was not decided at that time. The term urban development refers to a huge span of urban development. Things like South Lake Union, the malls and subdivisions around Issaquah, small towns like Eatonville and Fall City and Black Diamond, all are urban development. So when the land was designated for urban development in the 1990s, that issue wasn't decided, what type of urban development. That wasn't decided until 2009, when the city, its citizens, Yarrow Bay, came together and developed a comprehensive plan that designated this land to have a type of urban development that respected and sustained the town's small town character. A year later, Yarrow Bay walked in with its application, which did not comply with that comprehensive plan policy. The city council, in its decision here, acknowledged that the comprehensive plan has a strong preference to retain small town character. And yet Yarrow Bay walks in with an application to clear cut nearly 1,000 acres, to level it flat as a pancake, and develop it with big box malls and subdivisions, as if they were outside of Issaquah and not in the small historic town of Black Diamond, as if they hadn't read the comprehensive plan that had been adopted the year before. The citizens were outraged. To use the words one of the case, there was a lot of displeasure. But it wasn't displeasure with a legal action. It was displeasure with an illegal action. They talked to the city council. They talked to the mayor. They talked to staff. But the steamroller was going, and the city council approved this project. The citizens took that displeasure. They unelected the city council. They're in the process of unelecting the mayor, who just got 15% of the vote in the primary, and they filed this lawsuit to challenge this illegal action. The problem with the small town character issue manifests itself in two different ways in our issues. One is there simply is no substantial evidence in the record to support a finding, if it had been made, that this project's character is consistent with the small town character that the comprehensive plan said was the root of the city's proposals for this policies for this area. There are no findings. To the contrary, the hearing examiner said the project, the 1,000 acres, nearly 1,000 acres, will be cleared of all vegetation and graded. That is the finding that was made. The city council did not enter a finding saying somehow the character of this project is consistent with the town's small town character. Which brings me to the second issue. Not only is there no substantial evidence, there's no finding on that issue. You're supposed to be reviewing the city's findings. And the city, in Conclusion of Law 27, identifies this issue. The city said it was the most controversial comprehensive plan policies in the case. And then it ducks it. It never talks about the character of this development and how it does or doesn't meet the small town character policies of the plan. Instead, the Conclusion of Law 27 digresses and talks about density. The issue wasn't density. We quoted in our brief, the comprehensive plan recognizes there's a difference between density and character. As I said at the outset, Black Diamond, Issaquah, South Lake Union all have urban densities, but they have very different characters. The other issue I want to mention very briefly is, because there were many issues we raised, but it is on the EIS. And the environmental impact statement here was challenged to a city-employed hearing examiner who, I mean, it was almost in my mind like jury nullification, if you will, because the hearing examiner actually made repeated findings that the EIS was inadequate in various ways and then proceeded to invent reasons for saying, well, even though it was inadequate, I'm going to approve it anyway. And one of those ways that is most destructive of our Environmental Policy Act is this concept of I'm going to average out the good parts of the EIS with the deficient parts of the EIS and say that overall, a term he used several times in his decision, overall the EIS did a pretty good job. But that doesn't cut it. When you have a failure of the EIS to talk about serious issues like the pollution in Lake Sawyer and the noise from 15 years of construction and the other items that he found, his findings, was that it was inadequate, not reasonable, that the information in many cases was actually buried in data sheets and appendices and reports, but not in the EIS. And then he says, but overall, it's fine. And that's simply not the law in this state. He also made an error in other areas where he said there were problems with the EIS, but they weren't fatal flaws as the first category were. But he was using the wrong standard of review. His decision came out prior to this court's earlier decision in this case, where this court held that this decision by the city was not a planning level programmatic decision, but rather a project specific decision. But the hearing examiner didn't have the benefit of that decision at that time. And so he operated under the notion that this was in part a programmatic decision. And that impacted his standard of review, as he explained. He said in his decision, because this is a programmatic decision, which turns out to be wrong, but because it's a programmatic decision, he says, a more general level of treatment is allowed. And so in other areas, such as the construction traffic impacts and the variety of traffic issues, where he said, you know, he came up short, but it's just a general level of treatment which is needed now. But that's inconsistent with this court's ruling in the first case, which said this is a project-level permit, therefore it's a project-level EIS, and a more detailed level of analysis is required. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Bob Sturbank from the firm of Kenyon Deason on behalf of the City of Black Diamond. We join the argument that will be made by counsel for Euro Bay, except with respect to the arguments on the motion practice, which the city has taken no position. I'm certainly here and happy to answer any questions if the court has any specifically directed.
So
to
one
the city.
Person will be arguing.
So one, for okay. efficiency's sake, one person will be arguing.
We love efficiency.
All right. May it please the court. I am Nancy Rogers. I'm here on behalf of respondents Beatty Lawson Partners and Beatty Villages Partners, called Euro Bay throughout the briefing. This is a case about how Euro Bay and the City of Black Diamond have actually followed the rules. The City of Black Diamond, King County, and private landowners made a deal back in the 1990s, and that deal was that in exchange for 2,500 acres of open space being permanently protected in and around the City of Black Diamond, the City of Black Diamond would then be allowed to utilize its discretion, its City Council discretion, to adopt rules that would govern what new urban development would look like on the lands that are now the Villages and Lawson Hills projects. The 2,500 acres of open space are already protected. We have here on a large board figure 5.2 from the city's comprehensive plan. All of that tan land that you see there is protected open space. The public has that part of the bargain in the bag. The rules governing development and defining what small town character urban density development looks like were adopted in 2009. They're contained in the city's comprehensive plan. They're contained in the MPD code, 18 BDMC 1898. They're contained in the master plan development design standards and guidelines, excuse me. Lots of acronyms in my world. And the developments that Euro Bay designed were designed, obviously, to meet those rules. The City Council carefully reviewed them, and in September of 2010, The City Council approved those developments, including conclusion of law number 27, discussing small town character, conclusion of law 16, and some other conclusions of law regarding the master plan development framework design standards and guidelines. That council decision is absolutely entitled to deference. Under the Phoenix development case, a city council who didn't even really include much in the way of analysis in their decision, but made the ultimate conclusion that something did not comply with the comprehensive plan, was deferred to. Here we have a detailed analysis in the city council's decision that small town character has been met. I wanted to use the projector this morning to talk about a couple of plans that help to show how the designs replicate small town character. I would just urge you at this point to look at some of the aerial photos in the record that demonstrate that there is a historic downtown Black Diamond. There's historic Morganville section of downtown. These are clustered areas of urban development separated by swaths of open space, and that is exactly what Yarrow Bay is designing for its two project sites as well. We are obviously here today asking that the city's decisions be affirmed, that the council's decision be affirmed in accordance with the deference that it is due, and we are also obviously asking that the hearing examiner's decision that the EISs were adequate be affirmed. The hearing examiner determined that the MPD permits were hybrid project and non-project actions. And I think that that is an accurate characterization. He determined that they were hybrid because, for example, in the traffic arena, as he determined, there were 46 intersections that were analyzed in the regional area for traffic impacts. And as the examiner put it, that's unprecedented for a non-project level EIS, but perfectly acceptable and normal and what you would expect to see on a project level EIS. At the same time, we don't have construction level detailed plans to analyze things like the queue length and the backups that may happen at a particular left turn lane at an intersection today. So we can't have that analysis in this EIS, which is why the examiner concluded that it was a hybrid EIS and designated it then as a non-project EIS, subject to review then under the same rule of reason. It's not really a lesser standard of review. It's all about the amount of detail that's in the permits and that's in the environmental impact statement. And the amount of detail needs to match. You've got a permit application that lays out what you're planning on doing. The analysis needs to review that. If you don't yet have a permit application for a specific intersection improvement, how can you expect the environmental impact statement to look at that is really, I think, the answer to the question. It's really about reviewing these EISs under the rule of reason.
It's really about the EIS. That's what we have to do. The requirements for the EIS versus how much discretion we want to allow municipal governments to have in making a determination about whether or not it's going to go problematic with respect to something or whether it's going to be project specific. And as you're more aware than I suspect there's been a whole lot of litigation about just exactly where we are and all of that in the last couple of years in these cases that have been cited by this court. I don't know if we've ever faced one. Hybrid. So now you're arguing something that's entirely different. And I'm concerned about what this court did in the prior case, what the hearing examiner knew and then applied. In this case, these would be the adequacy of the EIS.
Got it.
I mean, that's what it's about. It's always going to be a contest between specificity and knowledge. You can't know it isn't there, and I understand that. But can you go forward if you don't know it's there? That may well be the underlying issue. So where are we here? Obviously, I know what side you're on. Was this the best that could be done?
This was absolutely the best that could be done. These are extensive, incredibly detailed EISs, more detailed than in any EIS I've ever worked on for gravel mines or other projects in the past. Coming to the question of, I want to make sure we don't lose the point of a project action under the CEPA rules versus a project permit under the statute. Those are two different definitions. Project permits under the statute include things like unclassified use permits and site-specific rezones that, like a master plan development permit, do not include any construction. I think the city ably briefed the distinction between those two definitions and the fact that you can't read them together. They don't mean the same thing. This is absolutely a project permit, and the EISs were hybrid actions. That's what the examiner called them. They are programmatic level EISs that have a lot of project level detail in them. And again, turning then to the rule of reason, the law, I think, is clear that the purpose of analyzing an EIS under the rule of reason is to make sure that it provides a reasonably thorough discussion of the probable adverse environmental impacts of a proposal so as to assure that the EIS serves as an aid to decision making. And I don't think that anyone here could argue that this EIS did not serve as an aid to decision making. The cover volume is, you know, this big. The technical appendices fill up this much paper on my bookshelf. I want to make sure I touch on the point of overall averaging that Mr. Bricklin raised. What the examiner meant when he used the term overall averaging was simply that the minor flaws that he pointed out in his quote-unquote sum of all the deficiencies in the executive summary to both of his EIS adequacy decisions did not undermine the sufficiency of the document as a whole. And, you know, federal cases indeed do describe review of an environmental impact statement as a whole. And they provide that inadequate analysis of significant issues can be excused by the remainder of that EIS analysis. And in particular, in the limited time I have today, I'd like to point to the Laguna Greenbelt versus DOT case out of the Ninth Circuit, which upholds the adequacy of an EIS for proposed toll highway despite a failure to disclose accurately the toll road's impacts on 1.7 acres open space reserve that was the most, you know, precious resource in the area and was not going to exist any longer. But that EIS was upheld because the court noted that there was enough information to sufficiently inform the decision makers about what was going to happen if this project was approved. And moreover, the court noted that the litigation over the EIS, the appeal hearings, just like we had here, provided further opportunities for public involvement in the education of agency decision makers, hearing defects that might have existed in the EIS. I think the bottom line here is that these EISs, no matter what you label them, need to be reviewed under the rule of reason to assure that they provided a sufficient discussion of the impacts of the MPD permits themselves. Not subsequent actions that are going to have phased later CEPA review, but the MPD permits themselves, and that the decision makers were adequately informed by those documents themselves, as well as all of the subsequent testimony and argument that occurred. Again, we're here asking that you affirm the City of Black Diamond's decisions, apply them the deference that they are appropriately due. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. On the comprehensive plan policy consistency issue, you notice that council did not point you to a place in the decision document where the council made findings of fact, contrary to what the hearing examiner said, which said that 1,000 acres is going to be clear cut, stripped of all vegetation, and flattened. And nor did she point you to any place where they made other findings that would address how the character of this project was going to fit with the comprehensive plan policies. It is just as the city council did. They acknowledge that there's the issue, but there's no facts there. There's no findings to support it. On the EIS issue, council says, well, there's a couple things. First of all, she casts the examiner's overall statement in the context of that these were only minor flaws. These were not minor flaws, and you don't have to take my word for it. This is what the hearing examiner said. The EIS failed to identify and or adequately assess vital information and probable significant adverse environmental impacts. That's a direct quote. Quote, the EIS failed to adequately disclose potential phosphorus impacts to Lake Sawyer, which was one of the key issues about how phosphorus was going to pollute this lake. Failed to adequately disclose. Quote, given the prominence that Lake Sawyer water quality plays in the community, the significance of the phosphorus impacts and the uncertainty of the science, it was unreasonable, rule of reason, it was unreasonable for the EIS to fail to warn of the specific problems that could arise from phosphorus contamination. These were not minor flaws. Vital information, the examiner said they were vital, and then said, but overall, the EIS was okay.
But specifically with regard to Lake Sawyer, wasn't the rest of that that there is a mechanism in place to guard against the pollution with which you would have been concerned had you gone through this exercise?
No, there's not. He made reference to two other documents, the Lake Sawyer Management Plan and the Lake Sawyer Implementation Plan. In our brief, we point out that he talked about the shortcomings in those documents. Also, those documents were not incorporated into the EIS, and in fact, there was a case just yesterday from Division 3 that emphasized that you can't refer to other documents to salvage an EIS unless you've incorporated them into the EIS. We cited that. We provided supplemental authority on that. I also want to address the hybrid issue. They speak with forked tongue, if I may, Your Honor, because that's not what the position was they took up here 2 years ago when they argued to another panel that this was a project permit, not a hybrid, and another panel of this court accepted that and said this was a project permit. And unfortunately, the examiner didn't have the advantage of that, but take a look at it, and I'll just three sites, if you would, where he relies on the programmatic characterization to sustain the EIS. At 24620 regarding safety, at 24623 regarding queue lengths, at 24620 regarding the traffic model, and at 24618 regarding travel time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes the argument. That concludes this morning's calendar.
Thank you.